Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Osterman here, IU Insider, Indianapolis Star. This is Mind Your Banners for Tuesday, August 2nd. He is, as ever, the Bloomington Herald Times, Dustin DePirak, across from me. Dustin, it is the time of year where people our age and older get to cluck their tongues and say, can't believe it's such and such month already. But it's quite possibly my favorite time of year because it is followed by sweater season and, more importantly, sweatshirt season. But it is also the beginning of football season. Indiana opened fall camp today. We're going to pump the brakes on any kind of sweeping observations. We only got to see about, I think, 45-50% of practice. They're only in helmets and shorts today. They'll build up to spiders and then shells, which is basically like shoulder pads and shorts, before they go full pads in a few days and a few practices. But this was our first look at them in what, 9 months, because they closed down spring access pretty much completely, at least in person. And if nothing else, Dustin, I think we just wanted to get together and talk because it's the first day of fall camp. There wasn't anything sort of gallopingly newsworthy out of Tom Allen's post-practice press conference. He is not acquiring Juan Soto.
But he should have tried, frankly.
He
should have at least made an attempt. There should have been an offer out there.
It's fair to say Casey Teagarden's contract was just too big to move. Teagarden's listening to this, mind your banners. He's a big fan of you, Casey.
but also would trade you for Juan Soto.
If nothing else, I was talking to somebody the other day about this. I think it was at Media Day, and it was just another media member. And I just said, honestly, what the one thing I'm sort of from a neutral perspective looking forward to about this IU football team is the most fascinating 2 months of the season are the first 2 months, because this first month is our first look at them in any form since the Purdue loss last season. And then the second month, all the way up through the October 1st trip to Nebraska, is basically proving ground. Illinois, Idaho, Western Kentucky, at Cincinnati, at Nebraska. How they come out of that is almost certainly going to set the course for the rest of their season and basically set the terms for what we should expect from them. It's interesting because it's unusual that it's been this long since we've seen Indiana football in the flesh.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, we're used to having some spring access. Obviously, the world has been shaken up since COVID, and we're still dealing with those issues in the spring. And, I think obviously they just didn't see a lot of upside to making a lot public of this group coming off of 2-10, and certainly not to having a spring game. So we didn't get to see much. But it's the longest we've gone without seeing them. And also, there's just potential for just so many new faces. I mean, I think today what was just interesting to me, and we didn't get to see any, 11-on-11 or anything like that. And we're only supposed to say so much about it if we do. But the bottom line is, it was just interesting to see, what do these guys even look like in shirts and shorts? What do these guys look like just attempting to play football? Because, there are a lot of important players in this team that we have no history of really watching. Guys certainly we might have seen on other teams, Sean Shivers or Josh Henderson, but even not much in that case. I mean, Shivers, I think, and Basilak, if you were happened to make the point to watch Missouri football the last couple of years, you would have seen plenty of, but that's about it. So just getting a sense of who are these guys going to be? And as you mentioned, it's the first 2 months are going to be fascinating because, right now we don't have any idea who's going to play. We're going to find out in the course of this month who's even going to play for this team. And in the first month of the season, we're going to find out if they can beat anybody. And, right now we don't know the answers to either one of those questions.
I did feel like Tom Allen, when we talked to him post-practice, was, I thought, fairly honest. I mean, there are always all of the sort of attendant cliches. It's great to be back. We were intense. Seemed like guys were locked in. I was, this and that. But, it caught my ear in particular when he's just sort of like, I'm not really ready to say any of these defensive freshmen. I think he was talking about the ones that just got here in June. I don't think he meant the ones that have been here since January. But, you know, when he was just sort of like, yeah, I'm not going to talk about any of the freshmen that got here in June on defense, because I don't think – I think they all looked completely overwhelmed to me today. Allen has never been, like, the biggest sort of obfuscator in the world. Like, Kevin Wilson would do this just because I think Kevin liked to argue with you, where you'd be like, Kevin, you – scored 50 points and, you know, you beat Michigan 48-0. What went so well for your offense? And Kevin would be like, well, we missed some blocks. And, you know, and then, you know, the next week the reverse would happen to Ohio State. And he'd basically be like, yeah, but you didn't see these four things that went really well. Like, that's not Tom. Yeah. And it's not like he's an open book, but he is generally, he'll entertain your questions fairly directly to begin with. Even still, especially given how much sort of scrutiny is going to be on this team early after the way last season went, it was interesting to me that it just sort of felt like he was just kind of prepared to be like, hey, you know what? Like, it's I'm just going to kind of be honest and open with you. Because the other thing that grabbed my attention was not anything anyone said or anything anyone did. Last year, papered all over the walls of the football facility of the North End Zone, were little signs that said, what have you done to win the Big Ten today? Did you remember that?
I do. Yeah.
Did you see the signs today?
Did not.
It said, what have you done to beat Illinois today?
I didn't see that. I missed that.
I mean, those two things kind of paired together. It feels like there is a real sort of top-down change in focus, I guess, for Indiana.
Yeah, I know. And I think in retrospect, the consensus that they got ahead of themselves last year, number one, and number two, aren't nearly good enough to even think about getting ahead of themselves this year. He thought it was a good idea for last year's group to go in with really big ideas. And I don't know whether that was a good idea or a bad idea, but he seems to not regret it. I think he just seems to regret, I think, more so that guys were not held accountable to keeping it together once a lot of those, you know, lofty goals, you know, became impossible. But I think obviously with this year, he could see that it makes no sense to fill these guys' minds with ideas that are beyond them at the moment. Basically, it's just it has to be for them about just winning a football game and going from there. And because, again, I mean, they haven't won a Big Ten football game since Wisconsin in 2020. So, you know, it has been a long time. So they need to sort of focus on that thing. But, yeah, no, I think it's you know, Allen maintains obviously a positive air about him, and I think he always will. But I think he has been chastened in a way, in a sense of coming in and knowing that last year went wrong, and you know, just having to be aware of that, and not necessarily have to go over it all the time. But he hasn't lied about that. I mean, I think sometimes he gets branded as too much of a cheerleader or too much of a salesman. But I mean, there is more, there's a lot more honesty to him than I've seen from other guys that I would have branded salesman. He knows he can't fake this, but I don't think he's a sort to fake it anyway. It's just like, he can have positivity and love each other and the whole bit, but I mean, he can't lie about what the product is on the field. And he's not really trying to.
I want to play you something really fast. You ready?
Yes.
Chasen.
You pronounce it chastened.
Oh, okay.
I love you. I love you, Dustin. But it's part of my brand to just poke fun at everyone. Yeah. But it's fine because everyone pokes fun at me, and it's always deserved. That was great radio. I'm guessing we just lost like half our listeners.
Everybody just gave up right there.
You're right about the fact that like this has always kind of been Allen's way. And that was a little bit of sort of what I was trying to get at earlier, is that he's never been one of those coaches that just constantly challenges the premise of the question so that he doesn't ever have to answer it. Like, you know, I think right. Jim Harbaugh is another one that sort of comes to mind that can sometimes do that. I'm not even necessarily saying that, like, I don't understand why coaches do that, but I think that's something that has always endeared people to Allen. And I think it's endeared Allen to people. And I think I see it through the lens of the media. Like when I talk to other media around the league, I remember talking to Dave Jones, you know Dave very well, yeah. Ahead of the 2020 season, and him saying like he said, I was impressed with Allen from the beginning because he just sort of said what was on his mind. And the example he gave was at his first Big Ten media day, when the Big Ten was making this highly publicized push for Friday night games, Allen got up there, first year head coach, and said, "I don't think this is a good idea. I don't agree with it." The point is he's not, it's not like he's never guarded about what he says, but he will kind of engage with you. And that's why I found it interesting that he was just, you know, we talked to him again a little bit about taking over the defense and how different, you know, what's different about that. And I think you can tell he's been maybe sort of reinvigorated a little bit by that, almost like after last season, you know, he wanted a different challenge for himself in some ways. I think we both have talked about the perception that, well, I don't think anyone bears anyone any tremendous ill will. The defense just did not go in a direction Allen liked under Charlton Warren. But yeah. I also think coaches, you know, often I think that we tend to think of coaches as sort of creatures of results, wins and losses and things like that. I think coaches tend to try, the best ones anyway, and I'm not sure Tom Allen's the best coach, to be clear. You know, there's surely better football coaches out there, obviously. But I think the ones that do it well tend to try and be creatures of process more than results, because mm-hmm. they come to realize that if you literally live and die with every loss, you will be miserable and ultimately unsuccessful in most cases. And I sort of wonder if there's an element of this for Tom Allen taking the defense over again, that this is a little bit process, if you understand what I'm saying, like a little bit of, okay, there's definitely some stuff here I need to fix that I didn't like from last season. But like, maybe there's also an extent to which, quite frankly, I sort of missed this, you know, and I missed, you know, being so involved on the defensive side of the ball, and I missed, you know, kind of building out game plans and working on things and, you know, just constantly engaging my mind in those details. He just seems like, I mean, and Tom Allen can be sort of energetic about just about anything he talks about, but he seems very excited about that. And I think today, you know, we talked to him at media day and he seems eager and all that, but right after he gets off the field. So right after he's had two and a half hours of like, okay, I'm back in the, you know, I'm back in the pit again. We're working, we're figuring this out. We're moving this here. I got to watch this guy make this move, you know, whatever. He really did just kind of, for a guy who understandably seemed a little bit worn down and frustrated and just sort of, you know, like, God, will anything work? Will anything go right for us this year by November last year? He seems very much reinvigorated right now. And I think part of it may be this move back to defense.
Yeah, no, it's just, I mean, it's just taking more, just taking the wheel. And I think that's, something that even from the beginning has been an interesting back and forth for him to, you know when to feel like you've got to delegate and let go, and then when you have to grab it back. And I imagine that's got to be difficult for a coach, because when you're used to having these things, you know, if you're used to being a coordinator and this realm is totally in your control, you know, and then sort of stepping back and saying, okay, now I have to do all of these things. I have to let someone else, you know, drive this, you know, part, like I need to put other people in charge and trust them. And then it doesn't go well. And now you're like, okay, wait a minute. You know, where did we miss here? Where did it cease to be aligned with my vision? You know, and then think, okay, well, if it has to be back in line with my vision, maybe I need to just grab it and put it there. So I think it is very interesting just to see, you know, the extent to which Indiana's identity is tied to how Tom Allen wants to play defense, and feeling like if he is not ultimately, you know, pulling most of the strings there, feeling like it goes away from his vision of what they're supposed to be, which ends up costing them, you know, their total identity. I think that's sort of where it went, is just him just feeling like I need to be more directly part of this if we're going to be the team we need to be, is the only way this whole thing works is if it's an aggressive defense, if it's defense that causes turnovers and sacks and all, it has to cause havoc for Indiana to be able to really win football games. So if, you know, if I didn't get that with someone else at the helm, then maybe I just need to take it back. And I think it's been interesting to sort of watch him come to those realizations and go back and forth. You know, obviously he came to the point where he felt like he couldn't do it anymore and put Kane Womack in charge in the first place. And that worked out relatively well. Obviously then moving on to somebody else who had not been right next to him that whole time was not nearly as effective. So it is interesting, but he does seem like he's enjoying it and he's looking forward to it. He wants to be able to just, you know, again, be the guy who pulls the trigger, play after play, and set those things up. And I think he's very invigorated by it. It goes back to him being him.
Yeah, I also think, I mean, it's instructive, I think, to remember what he said, kind of what he admitted in the aftermath, where he hired Kane Womack in the winter of 2018. He kept calling defensive plays through the 2018 season, which statistically, unless last season got worse than I recall, statistically 2018 was Indiana's worst season under Tom Allen. I'll look that up while we're talking. But it wasn't until summer, late end of summer, like basically right now, like basically I think it was at team media day in 2019. So before fall camp started in 2019, Tom Allen essentially admitted, yeah, that is the worst in terms of yards per game allowed. 2018 was the worst season Indiana's had under Tom Allen. And he essentially admitted at team media day at 2019 that he hired Kane Womack, who he had coached with, you know, he'd taken his defense from Kane's dad. He'd coached with Kane at a couple different places. That he hired him with the intent of making him defensive coordinator, but he didn't want to ask him to do it in 2018 because he knew he was going to have such a young defense. That they graduated, if fans will remember, Tigre Scales, Chris Covington, Greg Gooch, Rashard Fant, they'd lost this whole wave of guys who'd been mainstays for 3 or 4 years and had been really big for Allen in his first 2 seasons as defensive coordinator. And he knew that he was going to be incredibly young and it was going to be, you know, guys like Jalen Williams getting lots of snaps as a freshman and just you know, asking a lot of young guys to play a ton of snaps, and that the defense was probably going to struggle. And he basically didn't want Kane Womack to have to wear that either publicly or professionally in terms of being the one that was coming in and tugging his hair out every day. Because no matter how much your head coach looks at you and says, hey, it's a rebuilding year for the defense, I'm not worried about, you know, the individual performances too much. In the moment, you're going to be losing your mind if you're a coach. You're going to be losing sleep if you're struggling that much. You know, it's interesting, therefore, to sort of chart his journey back to this. And I think it's valid you point out that Charlton Warren had never worked alongside Tom Allen. And so maybe some of that synergy was not quite there the way it had been with Kane Womack. But just broadly speaking, I think that there was, I think there is something interesting in watching kind of how he goes through this year, and wondering if maybe he's doing something similar with Chad Wilt. I don't know if he is or not. Maybe it's at least something where he wants Wilt working kind of alongside him for a little bit before he starts really trusting him more. But, you know, everything Chad Wilt's professional background looks like he should get the opportunity to call his own defense in relatively near future. I'm just kind of curious kind of where it all, I just find it fascinating kind of how this all weaves itself together, because I think there's a perception that Allen is pulling the defense back because he thinks it's some 4-alarm disaster. But then did that perception exist when he basically admitted that he knew it was going to be ugly for a year and he just didn't want to put Kane Womack in the firing line for that regard? It's just one of a number of things that, again, you mentioned the quarterback battle. We can talk about individual position battles. We can talk about the wider question of distribution of snaps along, you know, senior, freshman, sophomore, junior, or you know what I'm saying. There's just so much that fascinates me about this team because, number one, I don't feel like I have a lot of answers about them yet. And number two, they feel a little bit reflective of a new normal to me in college football, which is that we may just not have the same sort of institutional knowledge of teams that we used to, because it's so much easier for guys to enroll early. The portal is, you know, the portal and the one-time exception have changed so much. I just think, you know, this may be at the extreme end, but I think that we're entering an era where teams are, it's going to be much more NFL-esque, where we're asking these sort of year-to-year evolutionary questions that it's going to be hard to answer without just seeing game.
I mean, it'll be more crazy than the NFL, because, I mean, the NFL at least has long-term contracts when it comes to, especially quarterback. Basically, where you still have guys for all the movement that goes on the other positions. You generally have quarterbacks staying still. Once somebody figures out who they have and who they want, they give that guy a whole ton of money and he stays. That's not the case in college. Basically, it's harder to keep them. It's harder to groom them. In a lot of cases, they do move. I mean, it is going to be a lot like free agency, but there's not going to be even the base. There's going to be some guys to stick around, but it's not going to be, certainly not going to be the same as the NFL. I think all of those things I think are fascinating in that regard. I think one thing, as far as Wilt's concerned, I think one thing that just piecing together a few things that Alan and Warren said last year, one thing that really struck me was when Warren talked about Indiana having always had in previous years an all zone vision, which he just basically suggested is guys keeping their eye on the ball versus their man the whole time, basically just being more set on attacking the ball as opposed to worrying about guarding their man. And I think it probably goes back to the idea of Allen having made his decisions on risk reward and not necessary. And it's hard to get someone else on the same page with you with that, because it's just like, okay, if my guy gets burned because he's watching the ball and not his man, are you going to live with that? That's really the question. And so it's hard to do that for somebody else you've only been working for a year to know when he's going to be okay with the risk reward. So you do the safe thing. The thing that you think won't lead to you getting burned deep. And when Alan's, I think, point is like, no, I'm willing to take the risk reward. I'm willing to every once in a while have a busted coverage if it means we get some interceptions and turnovers. I'm willing to give up the occasional big play because we need to make big plays. And so it's hard for someone who hasn't been sitting next to you in that chair to know what your risk reward calculation is going to be and trust that you're making the same decision that they would. So I think that's kind of a big thing is if his goal is to make the Chad Wilt the eventual defensive coordinator, he wants to have a sense of what his risk reward calculation is and how willing he is to take chances and live with the consequences if those chances go wrong.
Anything else? Tremendously. I mean, again, I think part of this was just us trying to hit the start button on fall camp. Nothing, glaringly newsworthy. No, Connor Bazelak wasn't sitting on the side with his arm in a sling or anything like that. I think, it'll be interesting to watch the wide receiver position unfold. I liked some of what I saw from Donovan McCulley, from Anderson Kobe, the Tennessee transfer that I suspect people have kind of forgotten about or maybe never even realized.
Right, because he didn't play at Tennessee very long. He was a JUCO transfer to Tennessee.
Yeah. So, again, so much feels new there outside of DJ Matthews, who obviously, to be fair, I think we're pinning a lot of sort of returning hopes on DJ Matthews having essentially 1.5 good games before blowing out his ACL last year. But other than that, I thought it was a kind of a standard day one of a fall camp that there was nothing that just popped hugely off the page. But it is the start. It's the start of fall camp, and it's the start of essentially the end of summer and the barreling forward of the season or of the year toward football season. Dustin is freezing up on the other end of this Zoom. So I'm just going to go ahead and close it down there. This has been Mind Your
Business. I think I'm back.
Okay. Are you back? Do you have anything more you want to add before the internet does you dirty again?
Real quick. I would say, for one thing that it's worth noting, I mean, you mentioned it, nobody was on the sideline. I mean, other than Ellis and, Dylan McCullough, the second, obviously taking medical hardship waivers, seemed to me like just about everybody was out there, and it would be sort of an odd discussion if somebody was hurt. We would have had to sort of, run that through and get it confirmed. But I didn't see anybody on the sideline. I didn't see anybody really limited. So it is, I think, important just to note that they seem to come into this pretty healthy, at least at the start. Obviously, you know, things happen in camp, and I don't imagine they'll be just as healthy at the end of at the beginning of September as they are at the beginning of August. But they start off in a pretty good place in terms of having everybody available. But no, I mean, I think a lot of those, the positions battles are going to be interesting. I think there are people that think it's Bazelak's job. I don't necessarily think it is. I think Tuttle is going to have a real crack at this thing. I think if it was Bazelak's job, they'd have named him after spring. And so, you know, Tuttle still has a chance to win it. I think that's one thing to point out, that it's not a done deal as far as quarterback's concerned. But again, running back and wide receiver is going to be very interesting, but it seems like the rotations are going to be deep. So a lot of the people that we're mentioning are going to get carries and catches. You know, like, you're going to see Emory Simmons and Cam Camper and Don McCauley and, you know, DJ Matthews and Javon Swinton and Anderson Kobe. Like, all of these guys that we're mentioning are going to be a piece of this. Basically, to play some tempo, you're going to have to see a lot of guys run through. But I think it's a very interesting position, obviously, because, you know, their starters at the outside spots are both gone, and Freifogel and Miles Marshall having both moved on in their own ways. But you're going to see just a whole new crew of guys at those positions, and that's going to obviously change the way that they play offense. So, again, just I think a lot of intrigue in August to see just how every, you know, a lot of major positions play out here.
Sorry, I was going to the mute button there. This has been a, forgive us, really low rent version of Mind Your Banners. It was the first day of fall camp for us too, largely because of office Wi-Fi and my not paying attention to where the mute button is. I guess that happens pretty much all season. So, you know, we're back. Somebody put the Idris Elba meme on top of this podcast, but we will do more of these as fall camp unfolds. Certainly. I do suspect that we will start kind of picking up a lot of information in fairly short order here. Because there is a lot to learn, as you make the point, Dustin, about this team. There's a lot to sort of suss out, and so many positions feel like open books that you don't feel like you can pigeonhole one or two in any way. So stick with us, stick with Mind Your Banners, indystar.com/sports, heraldtimesonline.com. For Dustin Dupirak, I'm Zach Osterman. Thank you so much for listening this week. We will be back, I would say, probably around this time next week. Between now and then, take it easy.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.